Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubis Daf Ayin Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 16 lines from the bottom of Daf Ayin Dalid. You'll notice a double underline highlighting Rav Ula Bar Abba. On the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei Mivneh heading, we've written Deos Shoinos, different opinions, Bevi'ila Shebo'o Acharei Kiddushim Bayatim Shonim. Different opinions regarding intimacy that follows a problematic type kiddushin. In effect, we're continuing the topic that we had left off with during our last year. So we have highlighted these names, Rav Ula and then Rav Yosef Bar Abba, a couple lines from now. Omar Rav Ula Bar Abba, Omar Ula, Omar Rabbi Elazar. Hamekadesh, one who offers kiddushin, generally speaking, offers money to a woman in exchange for her acceptance of marriage. Bemilveh. So he's Mekadesh or Bemilveh. Uboal. What does that mean to Mekadesh Milveh? Bemilveh is a loan. Very simply put, a woman happened to owe a man some money. And the man said to the woman, you know, you owe me money in exchange for my foregoing the loan. Will you marry me? And she agrees. And so that's called Mekadesh Bemilveh. And then after that, he conducts intimacy with her. Another situation, Al Tanai Ubal. That means he offered Kiddushin to her, but on a contingency basis, conditionally. And then had relations. And then it turned out that the conditions were not met. B'pachas mishove pruta ubal, or he married her by offering her money or an item worth less than the minimum denomination, the minimum amount, and that's referred to as pachas mishove pruta. He offered her something worth less than the value of a pruta ubal, and then had intimacy with her. The question in all of these, where you have a problematic kiddushin, the case of being Mekadesh Bemilveh, where he forgives a loan in exchange for her acceptance of marriage, is not considered an acceptable form of marriage, because marriage involves not foregoing something that was owed, but rather giving her something in a proactive, positive sense in exchange for her acceptance. And that doesn't take place when you're foregoing a loan. So the Rebbe Elazar is telling us that Divrei HaKol, in all of these cases, Tzricha Heimenu Get, if they want to disband this marriage, in each one of the cases, a get would be required. And the idea behind that is that a man would not engage in intimacy on a non-marriage basis. We call bilas nusa, an act of harlotry. Therefore, when he has the intimacy, he is doing so with marriage intentions, that this bia should concretize the marriage. We should continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef Bar Ab, Omar Rav Menachem, Omar Rabbi Ami. Hamekadesh bepochos mishove pruta uboal tzricha heimenu get. That, we've used a number here, 3, which corresponds to the number 3 above. That in that case, I concede that the subsequent bia is effective in creating a marriage. Beho hu delo toi. In this case, people don't make mistakes. People are aware that less than a shava pruta is not a marriage. Now, if that's not a marriage, then what's the purpose of the bia? The bia is the act of kiddushin. Avol behanoch toi. In cases 1 and 2, where mekadesh b'milva or mekadesh al tanai, the bia there is based on the original kiddushin, and not as if the bia is a separate act of establishing marriage, but it's an act that's designed to, we'll say, consummate the original act of kiddushin. Let us take a look at the Rashi in the lower part of the narrow lines. Tzricho heimenu get, v'afilu hitoso b'tnai, even if the condition was not met. In other words, he made a condition that I'm marrying you on condition that you don't have vows, and she agreed to the marriage, giving the impression that she did not have vows, and then he discovered later on she has vows. That is an example of hitoso. She tricked him. Even so, a get is required. The ein odom oisa bilosa bilosa, a person would not do an act of intimacy as a harlotrous act. Rather, if he's doing an act of intimacy, he wants it to be of, we'll say, of marital consequence. He wants it to create a marriage. We continue in the Rashi, Rabbi Ami polig ad Rebbe Lozer vi Omar. As we saw in the Gemara, Rabbi Ami argues on Rebbe Lozer, and he says, Hamekadesh bepochos mishove pruta uboal, the case of marriage offered in exchange for less than a shove pruta and then a subsequent act of intimacy, who did tzricho get? There, a get is required. In other words, there, the act of bia is for marital purposes. Aval mekash milve, o al tnai uboal, or, however, if the original kiddushin was in exchange for foregoing a loan, or a kiddushin that was conditional, and then there was a subsequent act of intimacy, eino tzricho himenu get. No get is required. It's considered just a mistaken or a marriage that never got started. My time, oh, why is that? Behahu the lo toi, liosovor shepochas shavapruta kiddushin. In the case of the pochas shavapruta, people don't make a mistake to think that that's a real kiddushin. Ilkomar ubal the same kiddushin. Therefore, when he conducted the act of intimacy, he did so with real marital intent, that this intimacy should create the marital bond. Avu bahanach toi. In the other cases, kosover yodasi she'ein olel nidorim. The man figured if he married her, stating a condition that that you don't have vows, so he then had intimacy with her. He thought that she really doesn't have any vows. V'chiboyel adaita the kiddushi kamoi boyel v'lo l'shem kiddushin. When he had intimacy with her, he didn't have intimacy with the sense that this act of intimacy should create a marriage. He's assuming that the original kiddushin that he offered her with the stated stipulation was the kiddushin. B'milva, regarding the idea of mekadesh b'milva, lafa kol b'kiyum b'ilchus kiddushin, not everyone is expert in that. People think that by forgiving a loan, that is real kiddushin, and then the subsequent bia is done on the basis of the original forgiving of the loan, not as if the act of bia should create a marriage. And since we know that mekadesh b'milva doesn't work, and the mekadesh al tnai and the conditions are not met, they don't, the marriage doesn't get started, there's no need for a get. The subsequent bia was all based on that original faulty kiddushin. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav Kahana Mishmei De'ula Hamekadesh al tnai uboal tzricho heimenu get. This is a reflection of case number 2 that we saw above. So the halacha above, it was brought by Rav Ula bar Abba. Ula happened to be quoted in the string of names over there. Here you see Ula is quoted, but this time by Rav Kahana. So you see that regarding halacha number 2, there is agreement that one who's mekadesh al tanai uboa, one who is mekadesh with a condition, and the condition, and then he had intimacy with her, and the condition was not met, nevertheless, the marriage is formed. So that on regarding that, you can see they agree. And we saw the Svara before that a person wouldn't make his bia a bias znus. Zehoya Maisa, this actually happened. And the Chachamim didn't have the power of removing her from her husband without a get. So a get was necessary. So what, let's just describe the case again. There was a marriage that was done on condition that, some stated condition, and he then had intimacy with her. And then it turned out that the conditions were not met. The story here indicates that when this couple was going to split up, it was necessary for the husband to give her a divorce document. Now, this approach is la'afuke mehai tano. We have a long point, so note that this goes to the top of Amud Beis. The long point says that we, by saying that in this case of the marriage, the kiddushin al tanai, and the tanai not having been met, but nevertheless the bia that took place afterwards did concretize the marriage, that approach is to the exclusion of another approach. And that's what we see here. The Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. The following was taught in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, quoting a pasuk, "Vehi lo nitpasa." The pasuk refers to a married woman that was not grabbed, that was not raped. So that you have a woman that had willing intimacy with a man other than her husband, asura. The result of that is that she's forbidden to her husband. Ha nitpasa muteras. However, a woman that's raped is permitted to her husband. The fact that she's married and some other man had intimacy with her under circumstances of rape, that does not prohibit her from going back to her husband. V'yesh l'cho acheres, there's another example of a woman, she'af al-pi she'lo nitpasa, even if she wasn't raped, muteres, she is permitted. We'll see what that permitted means when we see the case. The Azo, and what is that? Zu shekidushel kidushei tois. This is a description of a woman who was married under, we'll say, mistaken circumstances. In other words, she was offered a marriage on condition, with a stated condition, and the condition was not met. So it turns out that since the condition wasn't met, the original kiddushin was invalid, was a mistake. Shafilu bina murkav al ksefa. Even if she has a child riding on her shoulders, meaning she, in the meantime, till the mistake was revealed, she happened to have been married. She was married to this man, had a child with him, and then it turns out that her marriage was all based on a mistake. So that we see a case of there was kiddushei tos, there was kiddushin, and there was a subsequent act of intimacy. That's how she bore the child. And the halacha in this source says, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, mima'enes v'holeches law. She has the power of refusing to continue with him and walks out of the marriage without a get. So that we have here this Tanaic opinion that was stated in the name of Shmuel, that a woman whose kiddushin was conditional and the condition was not met, no get is required. Prior to this in the Gemara, we saw Rav Kahana quoting Ula saying just the opposite, that a woman who was married with a stated condition and there was subsequent intimacy, and it turns out that the conditions were not met, she does require a get for the separation between herself and her husband. As you can see, a slash mark appears indicating that which follows is a new trend of thought. We have Tanaic sources, and they're numbered as with Roman numerals 1, and a few lines later you see a Roman numeral number 2. Tana Rabbanan, Holcha Eitzel Chacham Vehitira Mekudeshes. A woman went after Kiddushin and absolved her vows. So she's considered married. What are the circumstances? The woman had been married on condition that she has no vows. And after accepting the money and in exchange for that, she agreed to marry a man. She then went to a Talmud Chacham, to a Torah scholar, who's vested with the power of absolving a person from their vows, and she had that done. So now, let's think about that. At the time of the marriage was made on condition that she has no vows. Did she have vows at the time of the marriage? Yeah. We see that this very woman, after the marriage, she went to have her vows absolved by the Chacham. And the source number 1 says that she is mikudeshes. The marriage takes hold. Another situation. A woman had been married on condition that she has no blemishes. And right after the marriage, she goes to a doctor, Eitzel Roife, V'ripa Oisa, and the doctor removes the blemishes. Eino mikudeshes. The marriage does not take hold. She's not considered married. Well, what happened here? She was married by a man on condition that she has no blemishes. Well, at the time that took place, did she have blemishes? Well, yes. She then went to the doctor who removed those mumin, those blemishes. Here the ruling is she's not married. Ma bein chacham l'rofe. What's the difference? We saw in the case of the chacham and the absolution of the vow, that helps to establish the marriage as a legitimate marriage. Whereas the same, we'll say the parallel situation with the doctor removing the blemishes, that does not help to establish the marriage as a marriage. The Gemara answers, chacham oikir es haneder meikoro. When a person seeks absolution of vows by approaching a Torah scholar, the process is called Pesach, or find an opening through an expression of regret, where the person who vowed is let's say led by the Chacham through questioning. He's led to conclude that had I known such and such at the time I made the vow, I would never have vowed. So that the Chacham in effect uproots the vow from its root, so that the woman is viewed as, in fact, retroactively, had no vows. The Roife, the doctor, when he removes blemishes, ain't no merape elo mikal aboy, removes it from the time that the blemish is formally removed. You can't say retroactively the person didn't have a blemish. So therefore, at the time of the Kiddushin, when the marriage was made on condition that there are no blemishes, and there were, so the stipulation, the conditions of the marriage were never met. We ask a question, but here focus on the markings, the dashed underlining. The Hotanya, but have we not learned in another source, Eitzel Chacham Vehitira, Eitzel Roife, V'ripa Oisa, Eino Mekudeshes. Here we see, contrary to the source number 1, that by going to the Chacham and having the vows absolved, does not help to, let's say, reinstate the Kiddushin, the marriage that was made on condition that she had no vows. Well, at the time that she got married, in fact, she did have vows, and going to the Chacham doesn't help. So we have what would appear to be a contradiction between the two sources regarding the effectiveness of the Chacham in absolving vows. Omar Rabba, and we have triangles here. Number 1 appears here, and number 2 will appear on Ayin Heyom and Aleph, where we have another approach. So here the Girsa suggests we read this as Rabos, and we get to number two, we'll read that as Rova, another individual. Omar Rabba lo kasha. Ha, Rebbe Meir. Ha, Rebbe Elazar. The two Tanaic sources are simply, they're authored by different Tanoim. Source number one is authored by Rebbe Meir, and source number two is authored by Rebbe Elazar. How do we know that? What are the respective Tanaic opinions that lead us to this? So the Gemara explains, Ha, Rebbe Meir, V'yomar, Odom roitze shetizbaze ishto bebeizdin. In order to seek absolution of vows, so the woman has to present herself to the court. They have to listen to her, what happened, and then grant her freedom of the vow. That involves a certain amount of disparagement, bizoyon, shame. Does a man mind that his wife is subjected to that shame? So according to Rebbe Meir, the main thing for the husband is that she remains his wife, and it doesn't bother him that she would be subjected to that shame. Therefore, in source one, where the woman is discovered to have vows, and she is then goes to the Chacham for the absolution of that, that is all within the realm of the husband's acceptance. He approves of all of that. Now, source number two that says going to the Chacham doesn't help, that's Rebbe Elazar to Amar, Ein Adam Roitze Shetisbaze Ishto Bebeisin. A man would not want his wife to be subjected to shame in court. And therefore, he, when marrying her, he would not take this, let's say, vow solution into consideration. He would not approve of this in the first place. In order to appreciate the comments of Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Elazar, there's a long, let's say, bracketed section of Gemara that gives you the background for their opinions. After this long bracketed section, you see we end up on the upper part of Ayin Hayom and Aleph. Using your bracket length indicator, that brings you to the second triangle, Rava, he's number two, who comes to resolve the disparity between these two sources. We have a little note on the side where the brackets begin. Hezber asograyim, achre asograyim, after the brackets, muva oid hezber liyashev es kushis v'hotanya. A second approach to answer the question that began with the v'hotanya, where the Roman numeral number two was in our Gemara. Besocha sograyim, within the bracketed section, muva hamokor, there is presented the Tanaic source, sheboi moifim, there will appear in that source, bein hayeser, amongst others, Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Elazar, v'hezber ashitas. These two Tanoim, as we saw their opinions, and where all of that comes from. So, let us take note then of the general Gemara structure, so that will enable us to go straight through now with the bracketed section and not be taken aback derailed when we get to Rava. Understand that Rava is coming to resolve these two Tanaic sources, Roman numerals number one with Roman numeral number two. So now, that having been said, and we mapped out the Gemara, my he, we're reading in the bracketed section, what is this reference to Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Elazar? Disnan. We have a Tanaic source that takes you down to the bottom line. Hamotzias ishto, one who divorces his wife, mishum neder, lo yachzir. A man realizes that his wife is a vowing type individual, and he doesn't want to live with a woman like that, so he divorces her. We're told, you cannot take her back. You can't remarry her. If you divorce her, mishum shemra, you divorce her because there was talk about her having behaved immorally, lo yachzir. You are not to take her back. Rashi says, lo yachzir, mefors pesachas gittin, trei taimi. There are two reasons that are given in Maseches Gittin. Iko lemadomer mishum kilkula. One mandomer has to do with kilkul. Shimato imer yachzir, if you allow him to take her back, shemo telech v'dose, we're afraid that after he divorced her initially, she'll go and marry another man. V'nimso shemra, sheno shemra, o neder ne'akar de'chocham. And then, after she marries another man, the rumor about her immorality is dispelled, resulting in it not simply husband's realization that it wasn't true. Or, in the interim, after she marries a second guy, the nether that she had taken is absolved by a chacham. Umekalkulo zevi oimer, and the original husband would then say, ilu hoyisiyodea shekenu, had I known that vows can be rescinded, or that the rumors were untrue, the rumors of immorality were untrue, if he had given me even 100 mona, let's say, even if they had given me $1,000,000, I wouldn't have divorced you. The only reason I divorced is because I thought that the rumors about your immorality were true, or I thought that the vows that you take had no solution to them. So, if the husband would say that, had I known that it wasn't true, or had I known that the vows could be absolved, and in the meantime she had gone off and married another man and had kids with that other guy, this would undo the divorce retroactively. And if she is not divorced from the first man, what's she doing having kids with the second husband? L'fikach omrim lo, therefore, we tell the man, Haviyodea, the man that divorces his wife, we tell him, let it be known to you, Shamotzias ishto mishum shemra, o mishum neder lo yachzir. If you're divorcing your wife because of, rumors, or because she's a vowing type individual, I want you to know, you won't be able to take her back. Im chavivo yalecho, if she is beloved to you, lo tamayo lo tzio, don't be so quick to get rid of her. The osi su lekakel, and if he then actually does divorce her, and he then comes up with this story, oh, I would never have divorced her had I known this and that, he won't be believed. Shere yodea shenesra lov, he was informed, he knows that she is forbidden to him. V'lo chosh livdok esadover, and he didn't bother checking it out. He didn't bother checking out whether the rumor was true. He didn't bother checking out whether vows could be absolved. Another approach says the reason we don't let a man who divorced because of neder, because of shemra, to take her back is as a warning to Jewish women not to behave immorally and not to be vowing types. So we continue in the Tanaic source. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol neder shiyodu bo rabim lo yachzir. Any vow that was taken, that was vowed in the presence of 10 others, in the presence of rabbim means a public, whatever, the Gemara will have to determine what is meant by a public, then a woman like that cannot be taken back. Rashi on the second line under the Gemara says, lo yachzir kosover taima mishum shleu prutzos b'nedarim hu. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the problem behind the vows is this uncoming behavior, loose. Prutzos is an expression of looseness, of unbridled behavior. So we don't want women to be like that. V'chinodr b'fnei rabim, v'zehu nedir shein lo hafora, k'namrim begitin, a woman who takes a vow in the presence of 10, that, the Gemara says in Gittin, is a type of vow that cannot be rescinded. Partsa yoysimidai, she's gone too far. It's bad to take vows, but bad and worse taking a vow that can't be rescinded. And that deserves a fine, kansuha. And therefore, we say she cannot be taken back by her husband. The Tanaic source continues, Lo yodu bo rabim, if a woman had made a vow that was not known, wasn't in public, and this kind of vow can be undone, so yachsir, here they didn't impose the knas, and Rashi explains that Rebbe Yehuda is not concerned about that whole scenario of a husband who divorces a wife because of this kind of neder. And then claiming after she marries another man, oh, had I known that I could absolve vows, I certainly would never have divorced you. That is not something that bothers Rebbe Yehuda. That scenario doesn't bother him, all right? Rebbe Meir Omer, Kol neder, shetzorach hakiras chocham lo yachzir. V'sheinu tzorach hakiras chocham yachzir. Any type of neder that has to be subjected to a chocham in order to be absolved. In other words, the husband cannot absolve this particular kind of vow because it's not something that affects him, or it's not a neder of inui nefesh. It's not a neder that results in her experiencing pain. So any neder that requires a chakiras chocham, Lo yachzir, he shall not take back his wife if he divorced her because of nedarim like that. And Rashi explains because of the kilkul problem. And let's look at Rashi together in the middle of the wide lines under the Gemara text. Lo yachzir. Kosovar, Rabbi Meir holds, Taimo mishum kilkula. The prohibition of taking her back is because of the kilkul issue. That was the story that we saw above in the Rashi. Hilkoch behai ika kilkula. In this case, where the vow in question was a vow that would have required a chakiras chacham, that is fertile ground for a kilkul to have taken place. The oimer, where the husband might have said, ilu hoyisi yodeh, the chacham yochol atir lo yisi megarshech. Had I known that a sage could absolve the vow, I would never have divorced you. The roitza ha'isi shetis baza bebezdin v'atir loch. As far as I'm concerned, I would have been just as I was. I would have been happy, even if you had to be subjected to shame in bezdin, just to have that vow undone. So, as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, a neder that requires chakiras chacham, and he divorced her because of a neder like that, lo yasir, he is not to take her back. And as we saw already in Rashi, because that, if he were able to take her back, you have a situation of the husband having said, had I known that a chocham could absolve the vow, I never would have divorced you. So we go one step ahead of him and say that if you're divorcing her based on those kind of vows that need chakir chocham, you should know you're not going to ever be able to take her back. So we won't be able to say, had I known it could be absolved by a sage, I never would have divorced her. You're still not going to be able to take her back. V'she'eino tzorach hakiras chacham, those kind of vows that the husband could have absolved, and he divorced her. Yachzir, he is entitled to take her back. The Rashi says, yachzir, the b'hai lo motzi l'kalkla, in this kind of situation, he can't mess her up. Shahaya lo lahafir v'lahafir. The husband is charged with the responsibility of having been mafir, and if he didn't do his didn't fulfill his responsibility, so he can't then say, had I known that that I could have absolved the vows. He should have absolved the vow. So there's no, let's say, expression of regret that he could make here that would result in being mekalkel her marriage to another man. We continue in the source. Omar Rebbe Lazar. Lo osru tzorech. The rabbis didn't prohibit the taking back of a woman because of those kind of vows that required chakiras chacham, elo mitnei she'eino tzarach, only because of those kind of vows that the husband could have absolved. We look in the Rashi, elo mitnei she'eino tzarach, she'atzarach chakiras chacham ein bo kilkol. Those kind of vows that require a chacham to undo do not pose any potential kilkul. Delav kol kamine lomar. We're not going to believe a husband to say, again, according to Rebbe Lozer, we're not going to believe a husband to say, ilu ho'isi odea, had I known that the vow could have been absolved, I would have sent you to a chacham. Lefi she'ein adam rotze she'tizbaze ishto bebeist, and a man would never want his wife to be subjected to the shame of appearing in court. Ela mitnei masruhu. Why then, if a man divorces his wife because of vows that require chakiras chacham, do we say you can't take her back? Tekzera mitnei she'eino tzarech. With regard, it's an anticipation of a man divorcing his wife based on vows that he, the husband, could have absolved. Diyochol hu lekachesh v'lomar. The husband could say, "Lo hoisi yodea sheni yochel hafer." I didn't know that I have the power of absolving. And had I known that, I never would have divorced you. So that is the case of einot sar chakiras chacham, and that being a claim he could make. The gozru hai otu hai. We forbid not only in the case of the Einot Tzarach of taking her back because of the kilkul that could result, but we will not let you take back even those vows that were Tzarach HaKiras Chacham, even though that over there he couldn't have really messed her up. Now, you can see we have an additional marking. This is a brackets within a brackets. We call this the angular brackets. The note on the side, the starred note, reads Sograyim Elu, the Sograyim L'Shem Dilu. These angular brackets are here for skipping purposes. Achrei Sograyim Gemara Masbira Machlokes Rabbi Meir Rabbi Lozer. The L'Shem Kach Huva Kol Aketa. After these angular brackets, the Gemara will present the opinions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lozer with the Gemara explanation. And that's the reason that this whole section was brought in. Therefore, we're here really to de-emphasize the part in the angular brackets. Besoch, the angular brackets, HaGemara Masbira, Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, Shuva B'Mokar Anal. Within the angular brackets, so the Gemara explains Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, who happened to be cited in this source as well. So now that the sugi has been mapped out, let's go through it straight through. My time of the Rabbi Yehuda, why? What is the basis of Rabbi Yehuda that said that a neder shehuda barabim ein lo hafora, that a neder that's taken in public has no absolution? Dichtiv, the pasuk says. This pasuk is in the context of the givonim. The givonim were people that tricked Yehoshua at the time of the entrance and capture of Eretz Yisrael. They tricked him into thinking that they were a far away people and not members of the indigenous population, attempting to save their skins because the locals were to be killed out. So the pasuk says, "V'lo hikum b'nei Yisrael." The Jewish people did not smite the Givonim, ki nishbaru lohem nesiei ha'eda, because the heads of the community had sworn, had made a pact or a treaty with them. Now, we saw Rabbi Judah make mention of a neder that was made in public. Rashi says, sheyodu bo rabim. The word rabim appeared, and the Gemara asks, kama rabim, what does it mean, the public, the many? We have a couple opinions on this. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Omar Shloisha. You'll see he's called Aleph, and then we see shortly Rav Yitzchok says Asara. So you have two opinions. Rav Nachman says that Rabim means three, because elsewhere in the Torah you see the pasuk says Yomim Rabim, and we darshan there Yomim is two. That's an indication of 2 days, which has relevance to the topic in which the pasuk is found. And the pasuk said Yomim Rabim. The Rabim equals Shloisha. That is responsible for adding another day to the topic discussed over there. But what you see is that the word Rabim is associated with three. So that a neder, Shehudah Barabba, a neder that was taken with the knowledge of the public spoken about means in the presence of three. And Rabbi Yitzchok Omar Asora, 10. And how does Rabbi Yitzchok know that? Eda Ksiv Behu. You can see the pasuk on the top line. It says Velohikum Bnei Yisrael Ki Nishbu Lehem Nesiei Ha'Eda. The word Eda appears in that context where because of the vow, so the Givonim remained untouched. In other words, that vow where the Givonim had tricked the Jewish people, that couldn't be rescinded. Why? Because it was taken in public. You see the word Eda appears in that pasuk. The word Eda is associated with 10. And here, the Gemara doesn't give you all of the background for that, but there is a pasuk that says, Ad Mosai La Eda Hazos. The Eda in the other context is a reference to the 10 spies that were brought back an evil report concerning Eretz Yisrael. So the word Eda is associated with the number 10. And again, we go back and quote from the source, Rabbi Meir, Omer. You can see we have an arrow indicating to look back to Ayin Dalet Omid Beis, and you'll see where this quote comes from. Rabbi Meir, Omer, Kol Neder Shetzorach Hakiras Chochem Lo Yachzir. Rabbi Loz Omer, Lo Osru Tzorach Elo Mepnei Sheino Tzorach. That's a quote. B'mai Komitlegi. What is the underlying point of Machlokes? Rabbi Meir, Savar, Odom Roitze Shitizbaze Ishto Bebezdin. A man, a husband, would be willing to have his wife subjected to the shame of appearing in court. Therefore, Rabbi Meir said, any neder that the woman had taken that requires a chachkiras chacham, and he divorces her because of his displeasure with having found out that she has this neder, he will not be allowed to take her back. Why not? Because if he divorces her, and she then ends up marrying another man and produces children with that other man, and the husband would then turn around and say, had I known that that your vow could have been absolved by appearing in court, I would have sent you to court to have it absolved, even though that involves shame. That's, as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, that is quite believable, because Adam Roitzeshit is Baza Ishtaib based in. And therefore, we have to preempt the husband from saying that because of the kilkel that would result. Because if he were to say that, the children she has with the second husband will then retroactively be children from a woman that was still married to the first man. And why is that? Because of the first husband's expression, I never would have divorced you had I known that the vows could be rescinded by a chacham. And we believe him when he says, I would have sent you to a chacham for absolution. So as we said before, we'll stay one step ahead of him and say that if you divorce your wife because of nidorim, you cannot take her back. And here we're told which nidorim, those nidorim that require chakiras chacham. Rebbe Lozar, Savar, we continue in the Gemara. Rebbe Lozar, Savar, Ein Odom Roitzah Shetizbaze Ishtoi Bebezdin. We would not believe a man to say, had I known that your vows could have been absolved by a chacham, I would have sent you to court for that. No, he never would have done that. A person doesn't want his wife to be subjected to shame. However, vows that a husband could have absolved, if he divorces her on the basis of those kind of vows, we will not let him take her back. Why not? Because we're afraid of her after the first husband's divorcing of her, she marries a second man. And then the first husband discovers that he could have absolved the vows, he'll come out with a claim. Had I known that I could have absolved those vows, I never would have divorced you. He's thereby expressing his voiding of the divorce. And in the meantime, she's had children with a second husband. They'll all turn out to be mamzerim. So we preempt that by going one step ahead of him and saying, listen, sir, if you divorce your wife because of vows, you can never take her back. That'll force him to look into the matter to make sure that before he divorces her, whether he himself can absolve the vows. But it's true, Rebbe Lozar really prohibits him from taking her back under both, with regard to both type of vows, but one is a gzeira only because of the other. Rava Omar. Rava, as we introduced earlier, is coming to offer an explanation for the source that said if a woman goes to a woman who had been married on condition that she has no vows, and after the marriage, it turns out she has vows, but she goes to a chacham who absolves her from the vows. So we saw source number two said that's not going to help. She's not mikudeshes. In other words, the fact that she had vows at the time of the marriage, that prevents the marriage from taking hold. What's the reason behind that? After all, wouldn't we assume that when a chacham undoes the vow, he uproots it from the root, meaning there was never a vow to begin with? So Rava says, "Hocha beisha chashuva askinan." In source number two, we were talking about a woman that comes from a family of importance. The husband there. When the husband there says that, he says as follows, Lo nicho li de itzar bekrovoseha. I am not happy with the situation that I would be forbidden to her relatives. Once a man marries a woman, when we say a marriage is established, so you cannot marry the man's mother, the woman's mother, you cannot marry the woman's sister. So in source number two, we're dealing with a woman that comes from a family of important people, say important women. And therefore, when the wife that he had married, the woman that he had married, goes to the chacham, we say in source number two that the chacham's ability, we'll say, to uproot the vows from the very outset to make her married to him as if there were no vows to begin with, that is not the case over there. Because, in fact, the husband doesn't want that to be operative. He doesn't want that to be the case. The husband prefers the fact that there were vows at the time of the marriage to be the determining factor. So we take a look at Rashi on the second line from the top. Isha chashuva bas gedolim. De'afilu l'man de'omar. Even according to the opinion that says roitze odam shetizbaze ishto bebeisdin, that a man doesn't mind that his wife is subjected to the shame of appearing in court to have vows absolved. Hocha omar. In this case where there's an isha chashuva, he will say, the husband will say, efshi be'isha nadranis, I can't live with a woman that has vows. Forget nami lo nicha li lemisvela, and I'm not happy with a situation whereby I would have to give her a get. Because if I give her a get, if I have to divorce her with a get, then she's considered my divorcee. The te'osir be'ima v'achosa, he would thereby be prohibited to marry her mother or her sister. V'lo nicha li de'lehevu kedushin, and it's not fitting for me. It's not with my approval that there should be any semblance of marriage. Once again, because in source number two, we were dealing with a woman that comes from a family of importance. And in simple terms, this man is only too happy to have all his options open, that he should be able to marry her mother or her sister. We continue in the Gemara. Rava, having explained source number two, where we say Eino Mekudeshes, it's because of this. Well, I hachi, the Gemara asks a question. Notice this is a long question. If this be the case, Seifa dekotoni. The Seifa, the continuation of that very Tanaic source says, Aval hu sholach etzochacham vehitiro. Here is a case where a man said to a woman, marry me on condition that I have no vows or I have no blemishes. And then he goes after that to a chacham and has the vows absolved. Eitzel roi feva riposa, or he goes to a doctor that removes his blemishes. Mikudeshes, she is married. In other words, this appears to operate retroactively. I'm saying it appears that way. Listen. Eino mekudeshes. Once again, if the source is, as Rava said, talking about chashuva, like important families, and people wanting to have all their options open, why doesn't it say in the Seifa that when the man made the whole, let's say, the marriage conditional from his perspective, that he doesn't have vows or he doesn't have blemishes, couldn't the source have read that after he has it absolved, or after the rofe removes the blemish, that she's not married? The lema, and explain the seifa, hocha ba'odom choshev askinon. Here we're dealing with a man from an important family. He has an important father. He has an important brother. The omra, where the woman would be able to say, lo nicha li de'itzar bekreve. It's not with my approval. I don't want to be prohibited from his father or prohibited from marrying his brother. So, like, why don't we maintain the balance between the Reisha, as Rava explained it, and the Seifa? The Gemara answers, because in the Seifa, the woman would never say, this lo nichali, I don't want to be prevented. I want all my options open. She wouldn't say that. She is only too happy to be married to the man that originally married her with the stated conditions. Ihi, notice we have a long answer mark, because all of the Gemara till the first wide line is here to embellish this point. Ihi, when it comes to a woman, bekoldehu nichola. As far as the kind of husband that she has, she's happy with whatever she can get. Kida Reish Lakish, based on Reish Lakish's teaching. Now, don't turn off your listening devices right now, because you're in for a surprise. The statement creates the impression that women are happy with whatever they can get for some kind of, we'll say, defeatist emotion that they possess. But that's not the case whatsoever. On the side of the Gemara, we have a tatnus, a subtopic heading, Isha bekoldehu nichola. A woman is happy with whatever kind of husband she can get. So that a woman would simply not be believed to claim, oh, I want all my options open to have some other guy that I could marry, the fellow's father, the fellow's brother. No, because as Reish Lakish says, Kidder Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish, Tav Lemetav Tandu Mi Lemesiv Armelo. A woman always figures that it's better to be two bodies together, you know, as myself and my husband, than to dwell as if I were a widow, meaning to dwell alone. And the double underlines that you see, all of these are comments that have relevance to the to this idea that a woman it's pleasing to the woman to have a husband. Again, there's a surprise awaiting us at the end of this series. Abaye Omar. Now, here are common statements. You'll see some extensive Aramaic in the next few lines, but they're common things that women that are like their Rashi calls them a moshel hedyot, common analogies that run in the minds of women. So Abaye says, the shum shamno gavra, a woman whose husband is like an ant, kursei be harsa rami la. She will nevertheless place his chair amongst the important individuals, with the claim that, you see me, I'm also married. Rav Papa Omar de Nafso Gavra, a woman whose husband is a wool beater. It's considered someone who like beats the wool to have debris removed from it. Or he combs the wool for getting rid of debris that might be on it. Rashi says it's considered a lowly occupation. Nevertheless, a woman whose husband is a nafsa, tikre besipe bava v'tesiv, she'll call him, say, hey, Bill, come and sit with me here at the entrance to their house. In other words, she's not embarrassed by the fact that she's married to this fellow with the lowly occupation. She'll sit out in public with him, her husband, even though he's a nafsa. Rav Ashi Omar, de kalsa gavra. Rashi says, kulsa b'mishpachas dofi. Her husband comes from a family of delinquents. That's de kalsa gavra. Lo boy talfachi l'kidra. She's happy to be married, and she won't make any demands. Rashi says tafchi adoshim shumaychol kal. It's a very inexpensive and light, inexpensive food. Vein chesron kiskol kach. Einish loshem, and she won't even ask that from him. Ach yikrus shmoy olaz. The main thing for her is that the husband's name is associated with her. So now you're probably wondering what's going on here. All these comments indicating that a woman is all too happy to be with whomever. So here's the surprise. Tana. V'kulon mezanois v'toilois bebalehen. We'll look at Rashi. V'kulan mezanis tos balein kol elu shebalein shvelin umaris lahem chiba. All of these women just described that have these called lowly kind of husbands, and they show affection toward them. All of this is a smokescreen. Eino elo shemezanis tachtehen. These women practice znus, spending time with other men, intimacy with all kinds of other men, ukshemis abros, and when they might happen to become pregnant, hein tolos es uber babal, they say, yeah, I'm pregnant, I have a husband here, he impregnated me. V'noach lehem b'anoshim kol shehein. It's a good arrangement for them with whatever kind of husbands they have. L'fisha mezanos tachtehen. This enables them to lead a double life. The Gemara, as we've said many times, speaks to us in what we call in our language. It's a reflection of certain morals and societies and human tendencies that exist time immemorial. Of course, this is a major feature of learning the Shas, in realizing that you're learning a monumental piece of work, the foundation of Judaism, which is literally eternal. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.